Do you feel that in a time when we are more connected than ever, we are drifting away from real human connection, especially to ourselves? I do. Hi, I'm Leticia Latino, and I want to invite you to join me and my very inspiring guests in exploring ways to reconnect to your essence, to your definite purpose, to what makes you tick. Are you ready? Hello, hello. Welcome to a new episode of Back to Basics, Reconnecting to the Essence of You. My guest today is Dr. Lucille Maddalena. She's a coach, author, speaker, and trailblazer in education and organizational dynamics. As the first woman accepted into Rutgers University's labor education program, she delved into the intricacies of human and organizational behavior, earning an interdisciplinary doctor of education with a second major in human communications. Today, as an executive coach, Dr. Maddalena holds the distinction of being the first woman coach at six multinational corporations spanning the pharma, biotech, construction, and manufacturing industries. Her uncommon passion for dog sledding inspired her third book, Moving On By, Harnessing My Sled Dog Team's Instinct to Win. And we're going to talk about that one. Hello. I'm going to call you Lucille, if you don't mind.
Oh, I prefer that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. I'm very, very excited about this conversation. Every time we have somebody that has this ability to inspire others, and I've read in my research, you know, I know you're a lot about being inspired and inspire. And I think that that's so powerful.
Oh, yes. That's my theme. Be inspired and inspiring. You can get other people inspired just by being inspiring yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's contagious.
Yes, it is.
It's contagious. So, you know, I always say that when I did my research on you, one of the things that I noticed is that you really have had a long career. Like, you almost knew you wanted to do this from the very early on, because I've had many, many guests that have gone, you know, different ways, and then they've used the wisdom into coaching. It seems to me you kind of knew from the get-go, because it's like you go back and coach. All led you through.
Yeah.
So tell me about that and your early years.
All right, my Italian parents did everything. My father built the house we grew up in. My mother ran a small business on the side. We were always doing something, always pushing to something. She always wanted me to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. I said no, but she wound up having me in playtime, being the teacher to my cousin. Always put me in that position.
All the Italians.
she knew what she wanted. She definitely knew what she wanted. And as I went through college, I tried all these other courses and it always wound up going back to education. Andragogy, adult education, really is fascinating because it's not pedagogy. It's not what you experience in the normal classroom. Andragogy, adult education, is where you make people be themselves, go out and experience things. It's you're learning through adventure, not sitting in a classroom just reading a book and talking about it. So that just fit with me. And then with some of the other things I've done, like sled dog racing, it all seemed to merge.
I love that. I love that so much, making people be themselves. So in all your, you know, we are taping these. This is where people are going to know the lead time on the episode, but we're actually taping this on International Women's Day. And then, you know, when I read that you were the first woman accepted into Rutgers University labor education program, how was that for you? Share a little bit about that journey.
It was so exciting. It was, you know, right out of college. You're so innocent. Doing college, and I entered the program, and the secretaries and I were the only females. We had to drive 2 miles to use a bathroom because they didn't have female restrooms for us. It was the dialogue; everything was just not welcoming. We had to stand the ground and say, "Wait, this is not how I'm hearing this." And it took a bit of an effort. It took quite a bit to imagine. But they wanted it. They understood the need that women are here. Women are succeeding. And quickly, by the next semester, more women were brought in. So they moved quickly. And Rutgers is a phenomenal university.
Yes.
They know how to inspire, and they know how to give you the right materials to be successful.
Awesome. Awesome. And where do you think we are? Just as of curiosity, I'm going a little bit off the tangent here, but do you think that the diversity and inclusion, let's call it movement initiative, are we making progress? Or you think that, because I hear some people say, oh, you know, this diversity is creating fatigue in people, and people, every time they hear something about, you know, women and like you have to hire this person because of the gender. I think there's something there that may be happening that we might be missing.
I think you're right. I think that we're getting sort of the feedback on it, or the back end on it. It's a shame that we need to have, or needed to have, these types of programs to recognize existing problems and biases. It would be nice that we could not have any of those requirements or stipulations, and perhaps we'll be able to do away with them, because it will be just be assumed that they're, why look at someone's sex or age or national background before you evaluate them as a person that can contribute, an individual, appreciate what they bring to you. And hopefully, I'd like to believe we're moving in that direction. And maybe we won't need all these requirements. Maybe we're moved past them. Wouldn't that be wonderful, that we could just be accepted for the abilities and talent and drive and dedication we bring to the job, rather than some type of false description of who we are?
Absolutely. I love that. You know, and as a woman, people p think that we get it easy because, oh, you have so many opportunities. To me, every time an opportunity is brought to me and they start by, we need a woman here or there, it already rubs me in the wrong direction, you know, because I want to be there because of what I bring to the table,
Exactly.
not of my gender. And so that a lot of people think that this is a good thing for us, but I mean, it is, because we have to correct the imbalance. But at the same time, it's not like it's that great that, you know, the first thing they tell you is we need more women or more Latin women or more, you know, all these things is like makes you feel like, you know, I'm an object. I need this, and I'm gonna pick here and I'm gonna put there, regardless of your own experience and talents.
Yes, you become labeled. And to be perfectly honest, because I've been coaching for 20 years, I did not coach women until about 10 years ago. And then it was only a minority, not because I didn't want to coach women, but women weren't in the level that I work at. However, now it's about 50-50. So
Awesome.
I coach almost as many women. I still coach more men than women, but a lot more women now than I ever did in the past, and I love it. It's just, so something right is happening, and you've
Well,
got.
I'm very happy to hear that. I'm very happy to hear that. And I'm curious about the difference in coaching. But I know, I mean, obviously, this is your third book, and we're going to talk about it because this is the new thing, like what we're promoting. When did you start writing books? Tell us a little bit about how that first book came about.
Oh, the first book, I was working for nonprofit organizations, and I saw that they weren't able to organize themselves to communicate their message. So it's a communications manual. It's so outdated. That was way back when. And you know how media and everything has changed so drastically. So it's definitely not something that can apply now. And it was useful then. I supported a number of nonprofit organizations, which were primarily women run at that time, using that book. And then the second book was sort of a build on that, and it just helped people take more of a leadership role again in nonprofits. So I don't really work in nonprofits now, and those books are really rather dated. This book this takes the leadership out of that and puts it in the environment that I'm most comfortable in. I don't
Awesome.
think back then I'd have the guts or the nerve to write it for a book on leadership at that time. I don't think as accepted.
Well, it's all a journey, but obviously there was a passion for writing. So tell us about this passion you have for dog sledding. That is something that is definitely unusual. How did that start? And just, I mean, it took you in an incredible direction,
Oh, it
and you
did.
took so I want to hear about that.
Well, I married a city boy, and I'm a country girl, and he wanted a dog. So we got one dog, and then we wound up with two more because we couldn't break up a brother sister. So why don't we have three dogs? Three big dogs. If you've ever walked three big dogs, you don't. They walk you. They're always They're pulling and pulling. They have so much energy. So we found if we put a sled behind them, and they can pull us, and they can go as fast as they want to and as far as they want to. Fortunately, we lived in a very northern community. It's really a small town, and because there was a lot of snow, there were a lot of other people doing this. So we joined clubs, and we learned little by little. This is not an easy sport. It's not a safe sport either, and it takes a lot of investment. We learned how to do it, and by the second year, we were really out there, which means during the winter, I was up at 5 a.m., getting the dogs ready, getting them in the truck, driving out to the farmer's field, hooking them up, getting out in the field, out on the trail, and then it was bliss because then you're out in the middle of nowhere. There was no sound. It's just snow and the sun glistening off the snow, and the quiet and the cold and the dogs, and they're so enthusiastic and their tails are wagging and they're just moving along at a nice pace. It just sort of rebuilt. It was better than going to the gym, that's for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, just by how you describe it, I love your description, by the way, because I think be the best things in life are just how you describe it. Like we hesitate, we maybe procrastinate a little bit, like oh, I don't know if I'm going. But then when you are in the middle of it, like you just your voice change everything, like what it gives you back. So it's always like okay, get over that hurdle of getting it done, get going.
Well, you brought up a, I think a really good point. And isn't it like that with most things? If you take on that challenge and do something that's really hard to do, the rewards are there. And
Yes.
it's hard to get started sometimes because it seems overwhelming. It seems that there's blocks and barriers and all these things going on. I think what I'm trying to say in the book is you can go on by them. The on by is a sled dog command for get off this nice trail, get into the deep snow, pass the team in front of you, and regain the trail. You shout on by, tell the team in front of you, I'm coming, and you tell your lead dog, this is what you have to do. And you can get by those obstacles. You have to make that decision to do it.
I really like that. Yeah, I was gonna add, because for somebody that's not in that world, the on by, I mean, you kind of get it, but you don't get it. So it's good that you explain it. And it's amazing how we can find wisdom in like everyday things. So you really like after all this experience that you gather coaching, you really go and touch upon very key subjects like how you build an executive presence, for instance. And I'm
Exactly.
sure that's something you touch upon. And I imagine with women going back to that, because I do a lot of speaking also, and I find that a lot of us suffer from like imposter syndrome, like building that executive, like commanding the room to a place where where the men and others in the room really understand your stature, because we tend to kind of take a secondary role often. So, I mean, you're the coach. What can you give us in terms of wisdom on that front?
You know, men have the same issues as women do when it comes to their presence in the room. I work with so many executives, and it's upsetting to see someone who is really bright and really talented and is not heard. They'll say something, and someone else will take credit for it because they're better at communicating, they're better at getting the message out. And the person with the wisdom is sitting there quiet because they don't know how to express themselves. So part of the understanding who you are and how you can succeed is understanding how you can communicate, how you can get that message out, how you can be heard, and how you can take the seat at the table and get your message understood and stand behind it. And that's part of what I think you're describing as executive presence. The other part of executive presence, of course, is recognizing your relationship with others. You will always, forever fail in a void. You cannot be alone. You have to be connected. And that means you have to form those relationships with everyone at all levels as a true person. You know, when a lot of people enter the workforce, they sometimes don't talk about their personal life. They think they have to be very professional, so they block those conversations. But that's who you are. And the higher up you raise in the corporation, the more I think you comfortable you get, and the more you reveal that, and that probably helps those connections. So maybe we should start sooner to trust ourselves and share a bit about who we are as we enter the workforce.
I love that point. I love that point because I suffer from it, and I've shared in the podcast before. But when you work in the family business, which I do, and I work now is 20 years, but not always I work in the family business. When I transitioned, I kind of was hiding that fact because people were, I was suffering from that label where she's the daughter of the owner. And people didn't care how many years of experience, where had I worked before. Sometimes they don't care even now after 23 years, but they still say it, right? And so I was not sharing that. But then when I did share it, people were super inspired by the fact that my dad is the founder and that he started so, you know, in the 70s in telecom. And somebody say, you need that needs to be your first slide in your presentation, like your mom pregnant with you at a construction site. And I was so afraid, and it's true. Like I started doing like being who I am, sharing my story, and I was shocked by how many people got inspired by that. And so it's so powerful once you embrace who you are and you are not afraid of all the labels that can come with that.
Oh, that's so well said. Absolutely. I wish that message were in everyone's offices so they can look at it and remind themselves every single day. Be who you are. Share your story. That's how we connect. And once we
Yes.
connect, we build trust. And you cannot get ahead without trust and rapport. Honesty is so critical. Building those connections and those relationships.
I feel though that do you would you say, I don't know if the pandemic had anything to do with it, but I feel that people are or it's just you know, the Sophia era. I don't know, we're more doing development, self-search. I do feel that people are a little bit more transparent than when I started my career. Well, now I'm 50, but I don't know. I don't know if it's just because I've known that people in my industry so long and they're opening up more. I don't know, but I feel that it's a little bit more open.
Perhaps it is. I really don't have that sense. So I really can't talk to that. I do think there is a difference, though, in the way people communicate now than they did before the pandemic. I think people more want to reach out. Maybe that's what we're talking about here.
Okay.
After all that time of sort of being sequestered, we just need
Yes.
the opportunity to connect. So that
Yes.
would be what the essence of this particular phase of the conversation. And how do we make those connections? Because after being isolated for so long, we're curious. What did we miss? What was going on? Because there are a lot of changes that have come out in our society after that. There are distinct changes in the way we shop and the way we go out and the way we connect with people. And the media has changed as well. So that affects it as well. So all of those things have a great deal of influence on how we choose to expose ourselves. And how what we seek when we're meeting someone new, what we need to know about them before we can feel we can trust them and open up to them.
I love that. That's a great point. And you mentioned influence, and I know in the book you also talk about engaging followers and that, you know, to lead, others must follow you. How can one achieve, like, there's this conception, I think, that it's either you have it or you're not. Like, you are charismatic or you're not, you know. And I'm always like, I tell my kids, you can be whatever you want. It's not something you in any trait. But I think the old-fashioned way, going back to the Italians, is like, you're good at this, you can do this, but it's almost like you cannot develop. Can you develop that kind of leadership where others will follow, and you have that ability to inspire?
Absolutely. You know what it's about? It's all about making the people who report to you succeed. They succeed, you succeed. Think about it. The leader that stands out front has to manage their people, telling them what to do, does not inspire their people. If they want to get promoted, they have to get the people below them promoted. If the people below them move up, they're going to move up. You want to be a leader, you have to get followers. How do you get followers? By helping people succeed. It's so simple. The sled dog team, you're standing behind them. They know what to do. You give them the right commands so that they know what the timing is and what you're expecting, but they make decisions too. It's an instinctual reaction. When you see someone who's making the right decision, you know it's the right decision. That doesn't take charisma. That takes simple understanding of a life and what I want out of it. If they're giving me a recommendation that works with my values, I'll respect that. If they talk against my values, I'm going to ignore them. They're not going to get along. So it isn't charisma. I'm going to say it's basic values and respecting your own values and respecting the values of the people you're talking to. There's no trust. You're not going to get anywhere. And that means you have to be open and reveal and share what's important to you.
I think that's a great point. And I see it, I mean, I don't know, I see it also with the concept of generosity. It's one thing that the human essence, I feel sometimes, in the fear of like this scarcity mindset that we live, like there's not enough for everybody. So if I give this person the opportunity to go and get a promotion, I might be hurting myself, so I don't do it. And like we operate from this idea that, because I see people sometimes like, well, yeah, they're great, but if I, you know, like you see this fear. And I think that true happiness comes from unlocking, you know, that goodness that you say, let me just be good. I hope this is true, because that's the game I try to play. It's like, be good to others and then good things will happen to you. And but when you are maybe insecurity plays a little role in that you, so it's hard for somebody in a position of power, unless they're very self-confident and they have the generosity to make others shine. And it's, I don't know, it's a balance.
It is. I think it has a lot to do with vulnerability, don't you? Allowing yourself to be vulnerable, that takes strength. If you want to be a vulnerable person, you have to be a powerful person. And allowing yourself to make a mistake or admit that you're on the wrong trail or saying that this didn't work takes power. And the more you're able to do that, the stronger you make yourself. You build yourself up that way, admitting that you're not perfect. Know that you are learning too. We are all learning. Look, in any management situation, in any factory, in any construction situation, you want to know the problem. You don't want the problem to surprise you. You want to be able to anticipate that problem so you can plan for it, so you can create it. In Japan, the big story years ago is how they stopped the construction line or the production line when somebody found something wrong, made a mistake. And they cheered it. Why? Because if you cheer it, you can create it, you can overcome it, it won't happen again. But if you hide that problem, ignore it, it's going to pop up again. It's going to get you when you're least expecting it. So let's deal with the problem. Let's relish the problem because, wow, it's surfaced now. It's not going to get me when I'm least prepared for it. I can deal with it now. I can put it out there and figure out what's going wrong and changing the systemic things below it that made that problem surface. It's a way to prepare yourself. That's how you build your trust in yourself and your trust in others. They know that you're thinking ahead and they're not going to ridicule you for being wrong. They're going to celebrate. Let's correct this mistake so it doesn't happen again.
I love that. I love that. And I'm that. And for my loyal listeners, they probably heard this story, but it's a true one. And people don't believe me that like just 2 months before I was getting married, I'm at the hair salon and I'm reading a book because I love to read when I'm there. And then it's a book about divorce. And my hairdresser almost goes crazy, like, you're about to get married. Why are you reading a book about divorce? I say, well, I want to read it before, you know, so I can spot any red flags before they happen. I'm about to jump into this adventure and I don't want the book when I'm already divorced. What good that is. I'm going to read it now. And so, and honestly, I think it was great that I read it. And I it's kind of that thing, like, you know, don't wait until something is painful, until something is causing you an issue. Try to prepare yourself to spot the signs before they happen. And so that you can recognize them and self-correct ahead of time.
Brilliant. Absolutely. Every bride should get that book.
Yeah. I'm the person that gives the book about divorce but right before they get married. So
I love it.
Just the other day. Well, it's just spotted. So I'm sure that with all the people you work with and they're all reading the book, is there anything like in terms of common advice, like a systemic thing that you see people struggle with or leaders struggle with that you want to share? Anything, any piece of wisdom that people say, wow, that's so good, and like that we can bring up front for our audience?
I think the main thing is a leader is both a role model and a mentor. And if you think of that, when you're talking to someone below you, someone that maybe you want to promote, you know, I wrote this book for the people I coach to be able to develop the people below them, the high potential employees that they have, so that they can develop them themselves. They can be a mentor. They can work with books like Chip Bell has a great book on mentoring. This gives you some dynamic role case studies and situations that you can use, because you have to develop the people below you. You are a role model. You have to act the role that you think is right, honestly and truly. And you're mentoring people. You're growing them. You're constantly helping them develop. When someone walks into a room, if you're really a good leader, when someone walks into your office, for example, you should figure out, what can you do for them? How can I make them better? How can I make this little time I have with them of value to them? What can I give them so they walk away with one little nugget that's going to make them better? That's a leader. That's a role model. That's a mentor. Not figuring out just what my needs are, but figuring out what their needs are. Because by inspiring them, I'm inspiring myself. We're both moving up. We're both taking on a challenge, and we're both going to achieve more.
That's powerful. Yeah, I've had a few meetings lately that people, you know, they say, what can I do for you? Like, we're just exchanging ideas. Is there anything that I can help you with? And it's so nice. it's one of those where you also realize, like, sometimes people don't ask. We are very bad. I'm one of them. Like, I'm very bad at asking for help. So, like, you know, I try to figure it out. But it's so empowering when you can ask and offer help, even when nobody asks you, because then you open the door and then you know that person is available to you if you want the help.
Yeah. And the thing that, if I can share something, while I was writing this book, and I'm writing it from the people I coach. So these are all very successful executives. I'm writing it for them to help their people below them move up. I'm doing this while my grandson is diagnosed with osteogenesis imperfecta. It's brittle bones. At the age of 2, he broke 5 different bones. He was in a full body cast. He couldn't move. Can you imagine a 2-year-old?
I'm sorry to hear that.
It was horrible. So I was awake at night. So I'm writing this book because I couldn't sleep over him. And I'm working on the book a little bit. And he seeped into the book. He's actually undermined me, because there's joy in this book. He found joy in life. He was hurting, yes, but he was loving life. He was still exploring. He was still happy. He was still reaching. Mm. And sections on mindfulness. I added sections on mental and physical health. I incorporated those into the book because I brought his joy into the book, his joy of life, his joy of succeeding, his joy of doing what you're meant to do, whatever that is, of finding that satisfaction, of finding that joy and that love and that and reaching out and embracing. So that got into the book. And you know, brittle bones is not something that's going to go away. Osteogenesis Imperfecta Foundation is working on this. So if anyone's interested, please look up oif.org. I'm donating a percentage of my book to them, because I think it's something that we have to pay attention to it and deal with this disease in children. We're starting to deal with it in adults, but let's get it early. It's a harm.
That's a heartbreaking situation. But, you know, as you were describing, it's almost like life found a way into your book, because here you are trying to write something about it, inspiring others. And then the realization that, unfortunately, you know, life is highs and lows, and it's all these, somebody once said, and it stuck with me, like, there's no beautiful musical compositions that are all high notes. They are all major notes. You have to have the minor notes to make it beautiful and heartfelt. And so I think by what you describe, I think that you found that blend of major and minor notes in the book and made it personal, and now with an amazing cause also, which is to help others in the same situation. And I'm sure he's going to thrive, because if he finds joy in that situation, that's a human being that's going to thrive no matter what.
Exactly. What a lovely analogy of using music. I appreciate that.
Thank you. It was passed on to me. I don't credit to do it, but I pass it along, because it's just, I loved it when they said it. And it's like, there's no major masterpieces written in major notes. They all have to have the minor too, to make it beautiful.
And that's our careers, is it not? We go through some jobs that we love, and we go through some jobs that we hate. The idea is, do we live for work or work to live?
Mm-hmm.
Understanding that, those phrases, and the fact is that we want to live. You know, we want to, our work to blend in with our lives. That's why I really don't believe in work-life balance. I believe in work-life harmony. There's got to be a way And now they're changing hours and we've got remote learning. Maybe we can get that harmony and not have to work by a timetable, but work by the quality of the work and really invest in the quality of the work so we can show our own values, show our own strengths in the work we do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know that I'm 100% with you. That's part of why I work in the family business. It's very present at times, but it gives me freedom. It gives me an ability to design that harmony that I need to really live my best life. And sometimes it comes at a cost. I say, if I had stayed in big, big corporations, like I had started the career, it would be a, something different, but I wouldn't have this. And I really believe that, we have to, like, just like the divorce book, it's like, what would happen if today I would get the worst news? Like, what would my life be like? And how would I dimension? Because you would drop so many things off your plate if you knew that your time was limited. And so I always try to think about that and say, what would be on my plate? And that's the first things that I would want to put there. And then everything else, you know, it's a nice to have.
Absolutely. That's so well put too.
Right. A job that doesn't give you time for your family, that cannot be the first thing on your plate, no matter what, I think.
Absolutely. My book is dedicated to family. I mean, what's more important? I think people accept that. People know, put family first. They don't know how to do it yet because we're still really defining how to do this. How are we going to work? And, you know, you have a 3-year-old, you have a 1-year-old, and you have a full-time job, both you and your spouse have to work full time, and then the 3 and 5 year old get to be teenagers and they want to go to sports and you have to drive them. It's a demanding life that we're living, is it not?
Absolutely. Well, but you live by talk, because I know that you've been married to your husband for over 40 years.
Yes, I do.
So only somebody that has achieved true harmony in both work and life can, I think, can achieve that. So congratulations. That's inspiring. And that's without reading the book. Reading the
I should have read it up front. It would have been a little bit easier back then.
Yes. So, Lucille, my last question is always about what makes you tick. You've shared so much about, you know, like what you enjoy doing. But, well, and actually also, if there's any exciting projects besides what we have shared, I'm going to share the your coaching contacts in the and on the show notes. Anything else that you want to share that we haven't discussed? Any initiatives? If the book, I know the book is big, promoting your book right now.
I'm starting to do a lot more speaking than I've done in the past. I still prefer coaching. Coaching one-on-one, helping an executive move to that next level, because when he moves to the next level or she moves to the next level, people blow the move up. So it's a chain reaction. And I just love my work. The people that I have worked with, some of the most talented managers and leaders globally, because my clients are global. I had one woman out in Portugal who was an academician, and she wanted to enter the pharmaceutical industry. So going from academia to business, it was a hard jump, and she did. And she's very successful now. And she's doing some outstanding research that's going to help us in our medical background and opportunities. So achieving our goals, recognizing our values, knowing what's important to us, that's what coaching is all about. I don't take on every client. I take on maybe 2 clients out of 5 that ask me to work with them, because we have to share the values. We have to be committed to that person's success. And it's not going to happen overnight. You can't take one evaluation or one assessment or get one piece of advice. Time goes by and you have to live your life and you have to experience your life and you have to study it and you have to say, what do I want? And keep questioning yourself. In the book, I have a whole section on self-coaching, because I believe we all self-coach. And you know the people who self-coach, you self-coach. I noticed that from you right away. When you spot yourself getting someplace that you're not comfortable, you'll stop and you'll figure it out. That's brilliant. You know how many people don't do that because they get scared, annoyed, or whatever, and just keep going? But stepping back and self-coaching, there's just 3 simple steps to it. It helps you move. And self-coaching is basically, when you get to a situation where you have to make a decision, think about, what did you do in the past? What worked and what didn't work? Sometimes the things that didn't work are the bigger learning experiences. So what worked or didn't work in the past in similar situations? And what do I want to get out of now, present situation? And what do I want this to look like in the future? So it's putting those three steps in place. That's self-coaching. It's very simple. We all do it. Let's give it a name so we can make sure we do it thoroughly and respect ourselves for taking the time to do that.
I think that's your next book. If I may give advice, like self-coaching is the first time I've heard the term. I'm sure it's out there, but I don't think you're right. We don't speak about it that often, and I think it's a very powerful practice.
You're right. I have been thinking about doing it.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. So, I think the title is great. I think I will be a reader for sure. And I think it's also, I believe that we don't give enough credit to ourselves. And I mean, you're a coach, and a coach are super important to get us unstuck. But with recognizing our own power, it's probably the most empowering thing. It's like when you know that you have some of what you need within yourself. And it's not only about others helping you, because sometimes we think somebody's going to throw us a lifeline and we're waiting and waiting and waiting for that miraculous thing that's going to happen, that's going to get us unstuck. And it's not about that. It's about how you unstuck yourself, I think, even if to reaching out to you for a coaching session. Yeah. That requires self-coach, because you have to recognize the need.
Yeah. You have to take on that task, that hard task. You have to find that. I call them trail markers, because the sled dog analogies are woven through the book, and there's some really, really good case studies in there that you would definitely like. But the trail marker is what happens when you get to that point where you have to make that decision. Where do I go, left, right, or where? And by recognizing that you're at that decision point, you make the decision. You don't just flub ahead. You don't just take the next step without thinking about it. You self-coach there, because you decide, this is where I want to try. I may fail, but I'm going to explore this trail. I'm going to go down this way and learn and take that risk. You talked about transitions before. Transition happens after change. Change is hard. We're giving up something. And then you get to the transition process after change, and that's where you can explore. That's where you can take the risk. And a lot of what I talk about is accepting risk. We have to take risk. You have to be willing to say, I'm going to might make a mistake here, or this is not the right way, and back up. That's what learning is all about. Taking that risk, trying something new, exploring, reaching out.
So much wisdom. Thank you. So for the final question now, yes, what makes you tick other than go pre-dawn with your dogs on the trail? Any other thing that resources you, that gives you energy when you feel a little low?
Oh, just being with my family, doing exciting things with my family, just feeling the generations and knowing the history and knowing where we want to go and admiring. I never realized I was going to like my kids as adults. I always saw them as children when I had them as children. Now they're adults. Wow, these are fantastic people. That's so inspiring.
I love that. Oh, I love that. I love that. That's what every parent aspires, that you see your kids and you're proud of who they are. I mean, with imperfections and all and flaws, but that you say, wow, I put this into the world. That's what my mom always say. She was a housewife. And I always say, but you never wanted to do anything else. And what better thing than the three of you, how you have turned out? That's my biggest achievement. No other job could have given me that. And you know, I respect that, because it is a full-time job, indeed.
Absolutely.
Well, Lucille, thank you so much. This conversation has been amazing. I'm sure, you know, some in our audience are going to be piqued by the curiosity on the book. So hopefully we have some people reading it. And I appreciate all you've shared with us. Thank you so much.
You're a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you. And to all of you out there, go have a great day. And thank you for coming back to Basics with us today. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Back to Basics. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook. If you haven't yet, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming platforms. This is the best gift you can give us. Join me next week for another Back to Basics conversation. And if you want to find out about other exciting things I'm working on, visit leticialatino.com. Thank you, and until the next time.